Research Councils UK, supporting excellence in the people, skills and research that have a real impact on the economic and social well-being of the UK.
I, for one, would love to say in 50 years' time, lots and lots of laser-based fusion power stations. That would be a dream for me. And if that happens, that's a fantastic thing. I hope so. I hope we'll be getting our electricity from laser-driven fusion.
Probably we are the most successful YouTube channel at the moment that's devoted solely to chemistry. I think it is very positive for universities and very positive for the subject.
This funding is helping us to understand what's being called the other CO2 problem.
Bringing together new collaborations and new projects. We're passionate about what we do. Our job more widely is to disseminate that to people outside of the world of sound and acoustics and audio heritage so that they can become enthused and realise its importance.
We must keep up. We must keep ahead of the game. And we generally do. We're generally pretty good at doing that in the UK.
These people, and many others like them, work in very different areas. But they have one thing in common. They've all benefited from the support they've been given by Research Councils UK. In turn, their skills, new ideas and discoveries have benefited every aspect of our lives. It's sustained public investment in UK research that creates an environment where these people and their work can flourish. It's also what continues to make the UK a world leader in a global market. Professor Rick Rylance is the champion for research careers at Research Councils UK. He explains more about his role.
It is to do with making sure that there is consistency across the seven research councils, that because we work all the time with outside agencies, in particular the universities, there is common cause made between the diverse bodies. It involves making sure there is a consistent cycle of activity across the whole spectrum and life cycle of researchers. So we run through the spectrum from postgraduate work all the way through to people at the very senior end of their profession who are leading on very major research projects across the whole range.
And that range of research is vast and varied.
The government has seven research councils which cover the broad spectrum of research through from medical research through to my own patch in the arts and humanities. On the way it includes biological sciences, engineering and physical sciences, natural environment and the economic and social area. It also includes the Science and Technology Facilities Council, which runs big operational things in astronomy and supercomputing and so on and so forth. The seven of them represent the broad spectrum of activity in research, and RCUK, Research Councils UK, is the umbrella body for that. So in other words, it operates as a clearinghouse for joint activity, an organiser of policy statements and an interface with government. One of the things that research does is to look at the future, look at emergent needs, try and work out what it is we're going to need over the next 10 years or so, and then anticipate developments and provide us with the knowledge to encounter those. Examples, well, an ageing population. How are we going to develop their care? How are we going to make sure they enjoy fruitful as well as long lives? How are we going to develop their interaction both with each other and the rest of society? We're facing an energy crisis. We need to work on renewable energy. How do we look at that? How do we guess the needs over the next 10 years or so? Climate change, of course, is notorious, and we're busy working on that. But climate change isn't going to be solved in a weekend. Climate change is something which all of us are going to live with for all of our lives, and our children, and our children's children. It's really important that research looks to the future. It's really important that the skills of researchers are tuned in that direction.
Looking to the future is something that has preoccupied Professor Harry Elderfield from the University of Cambridge for the past 40 years. Sustained funding from the Natural Environment Research Council has provided long-term support for his area of research, which has become known as the other CO2 problem. It's possible that up to a third of the carbon dioxide that we emit dissolves in our oceans. This affects the acidity of the water. However, at the moment, we don't fully understand what the long-term impact of this ocean acidification will be. How will it affect marine organisms whose shells may dissolve? What will be the impact on commercial fish stocks? Harry explains more about the role of the oceans in climate change.
I started off as an oceanographer And I was interested in the chemistry of the oceans. You know, why is the sea salty? And this involved my looking at rivers and also hot springs on the seafloor and how the balance of these affects the chemistry. And that really led me to thinking about, you know, what it was like in the past. And it all comes down to carbon dioxide, because the deep ocean is a really large reservoir for carbon dioxide, much larger than the terrestrial biosphere, the atmosphere and the surface oceans. And so the deep ocean is kind of driving the carbon dioxide, the record of carbon dioxide, so it's driving climate in the past. And one sort of nice way to describe this that one of my friends came up with, and I wish I'd sort of thought about this, was to say that in the past, the atmosphere was slave to the oceans. But of course now, with man-made CO2, it's the other way. The oceans are slave to the atmosphere. So it tells us it's a really important subject to study, I mean, both intellectually and also because it's of societal importance. But I think it also is a warning that the Earth system, the ocean atmosphere system, is different now, or is becoming different now than in the past, because of man's intervention. This funding is addressing a problem that has its basis in getting the science right, understanding the sound science, but with potentially very serious ramifications in terms of marine ecosystems, the ability of the oceans to feed us, and for that reason, it rivals in its importance for society the dangers of global warming from atmospheric CO2. So this is the other CO2 problem.
From dealing with the recent economic crisis to the huge societal changes facing us, Rick Ryland says we need to make full use of the strengths we have in the UK.
If you think about Britain's assets and what it is very, very good at in the modern world, it is no longer at the industrial end of things. That now has shifted to different parts of the planet. And what we are really good at is brain power. So our major resource is you, I, everyone else who's got ideas and can develop them. So research is key to the way we think about the future, the way we think about economic growth, the way we think about the various social and other sorts of challenges that are facing us. How do we tackle climate change? Well, we need researchers to tell us how to do that. How do we think about issues about social inequality? Well, we need people to research that. The key issue is capitalising on the real talent, the real brain power, the real initiative, the real inventiveness of the key intelligent researchers that we have in our community.
Many Research Council-funded initiatives work across academic disciplines. One example is the Science and Heritage Programme, set up by the Arts and Humanities Research Council and the Engineering and Physical Sciences Research Council. Part of this programme's work is looking at how science and heritage work together through audio and acoustic research and technology. Dr. Damien Murphy from the University of York is leading this research cluster.
There's sound as a heritage object, and that's thinking about actually the role of real audio recordings, about sound archiving, about capturing oral history, oral tradition. There's virtual acoustics and oralization, and that's thinking about, well, I guess people have an idea of what virtual reality is about, the idea of placing yourself in an environment that you perceive to be real. But we can think of that just in terms of the acoustics and acoustic reality, giving someone something over headphones that's different from what they're hearing in the everyday world and convincing them that what we're presenting them with is a reality. So that could be walking into a ruined cathedral or castle and hearing it as it was, you know, in the heyday of its use 500 or 5,000 years ago, and really being immersed in what that space would have been like when it was used as it was intended.
UK researchers are regarded as world-leading. Increasing numbers of national and international companies are seeking opportunities to work with them. In the case of this research, Damien Murphy's team is also working with Arup, a global firm of designers, engineers, planners and building consultants. The research is feeding into the future acoustic design of new schools and hospital operating theatres, concert halls and airport terminals. Research Councils UK supports more than 30,000 researchers at any one time, as Rick Rylance explains.
Think about how people develop in any career, not just in research. You start at the beginning, you develop through various sorts of stages, and you mature as a productive individual. Well, in the research community, the story is still the same. We begin as postgraduates, and EPSRC has trained, it estimates, over 12,000 postgraduate students over the past decade, interacting with industry and in other domains. Postgraduates turn into postdoctoral researchers, and eventually you end up with that number of around 30,000 individuals who are working within the research community very actively. Fellows are also associated with it, and various sorts of institutes and specialist technicians and so on. It's a whole people complex, this, from support staff right through the life cycle of any individual researcher, working in teams, working on collective enterprises to produce the net result at the end of the day.
Support for people includes providing the opportunity to use the best resources available. The Science and Technology Facilities Council provide access for UK researchers to world-class facilities. Dr. Kate Lancaster is based at the Central Laser Facility in Oxfordshire. She uses Vulcan, which is one of the highest intensity lasers in the world. 50 years since the creation of the first Ruby laser, Kate says there is still so much to discover about future uses.
We don't know what lasers are going to be doing 50 years down the line, because we're pushing the boundaries of technology all the time. For example, we're going to upgrade our laser Vulcan from 1 petawatt, which is 10 to the 15 watts, that's 10 million million times more powerful than a standard light bulb, to 10 petawatts. We're going to be entering a new regime of physics. We don't know what's going to be coming out of it. We have a reasonable idea. Lasers actually form a fundamental part of many areas of research, from chemistry through to physics. And certainly the highest power lasers at the moment are the sort of cutting edge area of research that I'm working on. You can do all sorts of things with that. You can accelerate particles, you can recreate astrophysical conditions, you can do nuclear physics, and you can do research which should lead, hopefully, to being able to do fusion in the laboratory, so making miniature stars and using that as an energy source. I, for one, would love to see in 50 years' time lots and lots of laser-based fusion power stations. That would be a dream for me. And if that happens, that's a fantastic thing. I hope so. I hope we'll be getting our electricity from laser-driven fusion.
The passion with which Kate describes her work is something that comes across very strongly whenever she talks about her research to a general audience. Rick Ryland says this type of interaction is incredibly important.
Public engagement is absolutely crucial. We are undertaking this research in a rather abstract sense to advance human knowledge, but human knowledge is, after all, human. So interacting with people, interacting with the public, communicating our findings is actually a very, very key part of our operation. Why? Because research is for public benefit, but also because we want to engage the next generation of talented people. Being a part of the future is crucial to the way that research operates in the UK, and I hope it always will be.
Someone who's also very used to interacting with the public is Professor Martin Polyakov. The Engineering and Physical Sciences Research Council is supporting a sequel series to Martin's highly successful periodic table of videos, which has attracted millions of hits on YouTube. The new set of films is on molecules. Martin says the University of Nottingham team behind the project is hoping it will inspire a new generation of young chemists.
I think the message we want to get across is that chemistry is fun, and that also it can be quite a good and satisfying career. And so the advantage of having a big range of ages among our presenters, that people can see chemists of all sorts of different ages. They can see students at various ages, at various stages of their career, and they can see me as the professor at the end, and they can see that we're all still enjoying ourselves. And I suppose one of the nicest messages that we got was from a chemist that I know in America, who said that his son, who was, I think, aged about 8 or 9, had started watching our videos and told his class at school. And now at school, or at that time then, all the children were asking, which is your favourite element and why, rather than discussing the latest programme that they'd seen on television.
We take people through from the very beginnings of their careers right through to the apex of their achievements as world-class scientists and researchers. Then we've got to nurture that development, and investment there is key. If we don't invest there, then all the rest is just equipment. And people shouldn't think about research as something that happens in remote places by white-coated people in laboratories sealed off from the world, or solo researchers stuck in libraries, festooned with cobwebs who never emerge for years on end to communicate with the public. This stuff is interesting. This stuff is important. This stuff engages and affects us all. And all the data shows that in Britain, we are wonderfully good at it. We must maintain, we must build, we must develop on a very, very, very strong platform, and that is the way we ensure future prosperity.
For more information on how funding from Research Councils UK is helping build a productive economy, healthy society and a sustainable world, visit www.rcuk.ac.uk.